Welcome to Private Club Radio, the industry's first and only program dedicated to education, news, events, trends and announcements. Broadcasting from Tampa, Florida, ladies and gentlemen, here is your host, Gabriel Aloisi.
We're talking golf today on Private Club Radio. Going to be joined by a very special guest, Paul Levy, the current vice president and soon to be president of the PGA of America. Lots of topics to discuss with Paul today, including the future of the PGA of America, the future of golf, how the PGA is promoting more diversity in the game, including getting younger athletes and women to join the sport. We're going to talk about the Rio Olympics and the impact that will have on the game of golf. And if you follow me on social media, you got a little bonus today. I asked listeners to provide questions that they wanted answered by Paul, and some fantastic questions came from listeners, and we're going to ask Paul those questions. He answers them later in the show, so definitely stay tuned for that. I love getting my listeners engaged because this is your show. I am the host, but this is your show, and I want you to participate. Other ways you can participate is by voting for the next show topic. If you go to privateclubradio.com/vote, there's a list of topics there, and you could provide your own if you don't see something you want. But I'll go out and find the expert, find the perfect person out there in the world to answer your question. Another way you could participate is by leaving a voicemail at privateclubradio.com/inbox, and Rick Coffey and I will answer that question on the inbox segment. The next time we're going to have the inbox is on August 29th, later this month. We'll be answering your burning questions as it relates to membership and marketing. And if you haven't listened to either episode one or two of the inbox, go back and check those out. Just check out the Michael Braidwood episode that was on June 27th, as well as the Whitney Reed Pinnell episode on July 25th. Those were the first two installments of the inbox, and we had some really great questions come from listeners there. So there are lots of ways to be involved, to get involved with this show. And we hope you're not shy, that you participate, because, again, this is your show, and we want to make it the best show it can be for you. So Paul Levy is up next, right after this message from our sponsor.
Why do over 60% of Boardroom Magazine's distinguished clubs choose to partner with Club Essential? The better question is, why not? As the leading provider of club management and marketing software to over 1,400 private clubs, our unified suite of modules are designed to automate club operations while informing and engaging members. From websites to accounting and POS to CRM, online reservations, and mobile apps, Club Essential has all of your club's technology needs covered. Visit clubessential.com to learn how our experienced team can help your club. Again, that's clubessential.com.
My guest today is Paul Levy, the president of club operations and development for Sunrise Company. In addition, he serves as the chief executive officer and general manager of Toscana Country Club, located in Indian Wells, California. In November of 2012, Paul was elected to serve as secretary of the PGA of America, which was the culmination of over 25 years of service and commitment to his association, the game, and the industry. He served as vice president since 2014, and later this year will become president of the PGA, the world's largest working sports association. He's been honored as Merchandiser of the Year, received the Bill Strasberg Award, and has served as president of the Southern Texas PGA section. He's a graduate from LSU, where he played on the golf team for 3 years and currently lives in Indian Wells with his wife and five children. Paul, welcome to Private Club Radio.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, Paul, playing golf at LSU, did you ever dream you'd one day become the president of the PGA of America?
Well, you know, growing up as before LSU, I grew up at the public golf course in New Orleans, which was just a really neat place to grow up, to learn to play the game, and never dreamed I would be the president or get to do some of the neat things I've done. Golf has been great to me. It's you know, it's a game that I love, but it's a business that I grew to love. So, no, I'm very fortunate. Never could have dreamed this 30, 40 years ago.
I can imagine. How does one climb the ladder of an organization like the PGA? How have you gotten to where you've been?
Well, much like the Club Managers Association or the Golf Course Superintendents Association, or even the USGA somewhat, you know, we have a governance system where we have 41 sections. So, like our country split in the 50 states, we have the Southern Texas section, Rocky Mountain sections, most of maybe Wyoming, Idaho, et cetera. And they have their own governance, where you have local governance PGA chapters are part of those sections, and they elect their own president, vice president, and secretaries, have committees. So starting back in the late 80s or 90s, I was involved in my section governance. And when you're the president and vice president of a section, you start going to the annual meeting of the PGA, or you get involved in national committees. Also, we have a national board of directors and a national board of control, which I served on, which oversees kind of like the Supreme Court for the PGA. I was on that for 4 years in the early to mid-2000s. So kind of a natural progression of being involved, going to our annual meetings, being a section officer, being involved at a national level, just kind of the continual evolution of a desire to give back and serve my association to the point that in 2010, I made a decision to run for national office.
Fantastic, Paul. Now, I know the role of the PGA professional is changing. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I think one of the things is, like anything, you know, we tend to sometimes pigeonhole or stereotype people. And, you know, a lot of our golf professionals or club professionals, head pro at a club, you know, they're great teachers and players of the game, besides running tournaments, merchandising their golf shop and servicing their members at the club, or if they're at a public course, their customers. But, you know, in the last 20 or 30 years, we've really seen an expanded career path role for a lot of our professionals. You know, you look at a guy like Dana Garmany, who's a PGA member who owns Troon, which I don't know if it's today, but it's definitely in the top two or three largest management companies. You know, you look at PGA professionals who own and operate their courses. You look at we have maybe over 1,300 PGA members who are general managers. Some of those, like myself, are members of the CMAA and the PGA. So, yeah, I think like any business, the role of the PGA professional is changing. And if you look at the traditional golf professional, whereas maybe 40 years ago they owned their shop and they focused on giving lessons and playing some golf with the member and running tournaments, the demand for a lot of those professionals now, with even the private member club, forget a management company or a for-profit club, the demands on those professionals to add value on the business side is gone up tenfold. So, you know, not just being the expert in golf, but understanding how to grow the business. And our professionals, we tell them that they need to do everything they can to improve their value to their employer to be able to grow economically, grow financially, and secure their position and their livelihood.
Yeah, so what is the PGA doing, or what are you providing for these professionals to actually have them take that next career step, maybe moving from, you know, assistant pro to full pro to actually general manager of a club someday?
Well, you know, our education system, when you want to become a PGA member, we do have 18 universities, PGM universities, Mississippi State, New Mexico State, Ferris State in Michigan, Penn State, that have a program that we kind of co-brand, where a young person can go to college, get their degree. It's a basically a general business marketing degree, and come out a step away from being a PGA member. And in that education program, it very much parallels the education someone would take that maybe they didn't go to one of those 18 schools and went to a variety of other schools, or even in the occasion these days, sometimes we still see people that don't go to college and want to get in the golf business, and they go work for the pro at a club. That's called the traditional apprentice program. Well, both of the education tracks are similar as to what is offered. So that's kind of the basis of education as our professionals become a member. They get an exposure to teaching. They get an exposure to running the business, cart fleet management. They get an exposure to clubs, some of the things that you need to know about clubs, food and beverage, agronomy. Then we have a very extensive offering of education past becoming a member, where you can do certification, you can become a certified professional, you can just take different aspects of what you want. We have education geared for professionals that want to get into general management. So we have a pretty extensive education offering for our professionals who want to grow in their career and advance their career in the other aspects, whether it be going from an assistant pro to head pro to director of golf to general manager. And a lot of it's not, to me, just the education. It's the life experiences. It's the networking with the other professionals and the networking within their sections locally and people at other clubs. I mean, I look back at my career. some of the best things I learned were just from other PGA members at other clubs going there for a tournament or going by their club on a day just to play golf and seeing what they do. You know, the old, there's not a whole lot of new creative ideas. We tend to steal things from other clubs or from what other people do and, you know, just see good ideas that we might take back to our club and incorporate.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of that and sort of the change that's happening in the world of private clubs right now, I know you believe there's a growing need for world-class spa and sports experiences, some of these high-end clubs. Can you tell us why you think that's so important?
Well, you know, our company, Sunrise, we're a home builder developer. So, you know, my job, I came to work for this company in 1999. Our chairman, Bill Bone, who has been doing this for close to, if I did the math, somewhere from 45 to 50 years probably, we've seen the evolution of this business to where maybe as much as even just 5 to 10 years ago, golf was pretty much the number one driver of someone coming to a place like Toscana where I'm at. We're a very high-end club, $150,000 to join. Dues is about $2,000 a month, and it's a world-class experience. And a lot of our members are only here half the year, you know, because we're what I would call a second home community, you know, Palm Springs area of California. They come here in the winter, and 90% of our members are not here from May through November. And, you know, a lot of the people the last 5 years have told us in our focus groups that they bought here because of the extensive lifestyle offerings we've offered outside of golf. We have a world-class spa and sports club, 28,000 square feet or so, that has 7 treatment rooms, private Pilates room, stretching studio. We have a great workout facility full of cardio and strength equipment. In fact, we're building an auxiliary building out by our new casual restaurant we're building, and we're going to be building our swimming pool in the next year, and we're adding to those facilities because there's such a demand. We also have created new opportunities for our people to network and socialize, because I think that's the most important thing at a club. People want to be around people like them, the old PLUs, and they want to integrate with people they enjoy being with. And whether it's playing golf or riding a bike, it's got a social aspect to it besides the physical or the sporting aspect. So we've created and gone from maybe just a few people joining and creating our hiking club and our biking club to where we have 60, 70, 80, 90 members involved in these activities. And in season, we have offerings weekly. In fact, this summer, our sports and spa director, Jennifer DeVincesco, she took 2 groups to Europe on biking trips. She's done it every year. She's gone to Italy, gone to different places in Europe. We take hiking trips to the Grand Canyon, and the members love these experiences. You know, just recently we're kind of seeing the pickleball rage, and we're going to now be building 2 permanent pickleball courts. We have a birding club where we have people that come out on certain days and are led by our golf course superintendent. So it's all about the lifestyle and the experience for the member. And what can we offer our members where we're going to be different from other clubs? Golf is still the number one driver for buying real estate, for joining the club. But the gap between the other amenities, the other activities at our club being really important to the home buyer or the people who join our club is greatly increased.
Well said, Paul. Now, speaking of Toscana and what you're doing over there, I know you have a concept, the WWCDB program. Can you explain that to listeners?
Well, yeah, that's an acronym for What We Can Do Better. So I know it's kind of just a silly little acronym, but somewhere is about, oh, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 years ago, and we had a couple clubs in Las Vegas, the one in Houston where I came to work for the company, Royal Oaks Country Club in Houston. I started there and challenged my staff at the end of the year saying, okay, what can we do better next year? I mean, one of our taglines for our company that Bill has had from day one, and he calls it the evolution of excellence. It's our vision statement. We believe in the evolution of excellence. So I started challenging our staff to say, okay, what can we do better? Now, that might be how can we control expenses better, which gives us more money to spend on the members, more money to spend on payroll. What can we do to drive revenue better? But a lot of times it's just what can we do to improve the member experience? And sometimes that costs a little money. Sometimes there's a capital outlay. And the idea being that technically it drives revenue and it helps us with selling memberships. Because at the end of the day, it's not always the direct, you know, if you're a for-profit operator, you might look at, well, gosh, we need to grow food and beverage revenue or golf revenue or spa revenue or fitness training revenue. Sometimes there are things you will do that you spend a little money, and I think it's one of the things that our company and Bill Bone, our chairman's, allowed us to do here at Toscana. We will spend a little money in some areas that don't really drive a line item of revenue in a departmental income statement, but it shows up in member satisfaction and new member attraction and reduces member attrition. Because we all know the most important thing at a private club is having members paying dues.
Absolutely. And I like that you're taking a proactive approach there. You know, a lot of clubs can stand back and stay pat and say, hey, we've got a great membership and things are going well, and let's just stay the course. Well, you got to continually be improving what you do and improving that experience. So I really love that concept.
Well, and you know, the what we can do better thing is something that I start with my staff. Now, here in the desert, we do it. We start in May because we're kind of seasonal. And we go through the summer and fine-tune. In fact, we had a three-hour meeting yesterday where we went through this year's what we can do better. You know, and just for fun, a couple of the neat ideas that we have on there is we're going to add digital signage, which some clubs have had now. You don't see it everywhere. But, you know, where we're going to have 56-inch TVs, where we, instead of using posters and things as to what's going on in the club, we're going to add four digital signage televisions in our snack shop, in the sports club, and just kind of to continue to communicate. As everyone knows, at a private club, you'll have a member say, gosh, I didn't know that tournament was coming up. I didn't know that dinner dance was coming up. And, you know, you put it in the newsletter, you put it in the e-news, the Gazetta, we call it. We do a twice a month electronic newsletter. You promote it through posters. Sometimes we put on easels. You promote it in a bunch of ways, but at the end of the day, if the member doesn't know about it, you got to continue to find a way for them to know about it.
Yeah, you got to find where what's making the most impact, where they're looking. If they're not using the newsletter, you got to send an e-blast. If they're not using e-blast, you got to send them a text message.
You know, in our spa, for example, we have a new shower head that has a aromatherapy aspect to it. Or, you know, our hiking and biking club in previous years came directly out of our what we can do better. So, you know, now, I mean, we have a biking culture here. We even put bike course signs throughout the community because biking is such a big part of Toscana today.
That's awesome. I like that a lot. Well, we are right in the midst of the Summer Olympic Games, Paul. I know the PGA had a hand in getting golf into the Olympics this year. Can you tell me what that was like?
Well, you know, obviously, golf hasn't been in the Olympics for 100 years, and Pete Bavakwar, our CEO for the PGA. Pete's been with us 4 years. He actually, his first day with the PGA was the day I got elected to secretary as an officer in 2012, November of 2012. And Pete has just done an exceptional job for the PGA of America. Very visionary, very well connected in the industry. He was an undergraduate, law school, became an attorney, worked for a while doing that. Then he went to work for the USGA for about 11 or 12 years. So he understood, he ran the US Open for a while. He understood the dynamics of an association. He also very much understands the business of television and sponsorships. And he also understands what our members need on a day-to-day basis. So Pete represents us on the Federation and is a big part of the involvement with Anthony Scalia, who is the chairman, and worked also very closely as the Olympics decided to bring back golf and they created the Federation to figure out how they're going to compete, what the process is going to be, what the actual competition is, what do we do about a golf course and things of that nature. Additionally, I think when you look at the Olympic movement in golf, Kerry Hay, who's our chief championship officer, who's been with the PGA since 1992, and we feel is the very best at what he does, running major championships, our Ryder Cup, the PGA Championship, which was at Baltusrol just in the last 10 days, or the KPMG PGA Women's Championship, which is in its third year this coming year. We just had our second one at Sahali, which immediately became one of golf's best events, a major, replacing the old LPGA Championship on the Ladies Professional Tour, or our Senior PGA Championship. So Kerry runs those events, and he's one of the three people that was picked to actually oversee the course setup and run the competition, run the golf competition in the Olympics. And, you know, we think that, you know, people ask, is it going to make a difference? Is it going to grow the game? I got to believe you're going to see some interest in golf increase in parts of the world that don't have exposure to golf. Exposure to golf in America, I think it's going to also help with some youngsters who watch the Olympics and don't think of golf as an Olympic sport and go, wow, I didn't know golf was an Olympic sport. Mm-hmm. That's a cool sport. And that's going to hopefully stimulate some interest on their part. So, yeah, we think it's a very positive sign that golf's entering the Olympics. Of course, you know, there's been some challenges this year, and I don't think they're just in golf. There's been some challenges overall with the site. But the good news is we got a great team down there of men and women. And overall, I think the message is having golf back in the Olympics kind of puts golf back in a realm of a different light, how maybe non-golfers would look at golf. And again, I think of our youth, who I know when I was a kid, I thought it was very cool to watch the Winter and Summer Olympics. It only comes across every 4 years. And anything you saw in the Olympics, you knew was a major sporting event.
Right.
And it's something you aspire to do. And I'm hoping that we'll see some youth around, not just in America, but around the world, aspire to take up the game of golf just from watching golf on television and associating it with the five rings in the Olympics.
Yep, exactly. I mean, any exposure can't be a bad thing, that's for sure. Now, as we noted in your bio, you're in line to become president of the PGA later this year. What are your plans for the organization, Paul?
With my fellow officers, Derek Sprague, who's our president, and Susie Whaley, who's our secretary, who was elected 2 years ago. And by the way, a side note, Susie was the first female to be elected as an officer in the 98-year history of our association. Diversity and inclusion is very important to us, but Susie was elected because she was the best candidate, not because she was female. But together with the three of us, our goal is to not necessarily have what is Paul's vision for the PGA or Paul's agenda or what was Derek's for 2 years. In the past, we felt like maybe there were times where leadership got in that trap. Not that any leader in the past was trying to do what they thought best, but as a president, you tend to have things you're passionate about. We've worked very hard these last few years to develop our long-term strategic plan, and that we follow that plan. So my goal when I take over as president from Derek is to continue with our board of directors and my fellow officers to make sure we have the right vision of where we need to be headed and the things we need to be doing for our membership so our staff can carry out and keep the consistency moving forward. It's kind of like a private club. You can relate. You get a new president, and I used to tease a lot and say, okay, the ball washers on the golf course are green. I want them painted red. That president's there for 2 years, and 2 years later you get a new president. They say, I want the ball washers painted green. 2 years later, the president comes in and says, I want the ball washers yanked. Or I want to make sure we have sesame seed bagels when we do the free bagels and cream cheese in the morning.
Sure.
And the new president says, no, I only want the onion bagels. And then, you know how the staff starts jockeying for position and trying to please the president or please the board. Well, we're trying to avoid that behavior and really have a consistent long-term strategic plan that leadership buys into and works together with Pete and his staff to carry out that vision.
Right. So what are some of the main points of that? If you could give me two or three of the main projects or goals of this strategic plan, what are they for the PGA?
Well, that's a great question. You know, we have eight core products, of which they're championships, employment, education. What are we doing on a global perspective? And I'd say the number one, our number one core product is employment. We are an association of our members, and we are an employment-based association. And our professionals need employment to feed their families. I mean, that's just part of the reality of it. So we're very focused. I think when Pete came in 4 years ago, he did a fantastic job of bringing some new executives to the PGA, revamping how we do our finances, our sponsorships, the business side of what we do. And we're very focused now on what can we do to elevate the membership side. So, you know, the business side is people out there dealing with the companies, dealing with Omega, which is one of our largest patron sponsors, or Mercedes-Benz, and the PGA Championship and the Ryder Cup and all those things, which are really fun things to deal with. But they are what drives revenue to the PGA. The PGA the advantage that we have maybe over a CMAA or a Golf Course Superintendent Association is we own two of the greatest golf assets in the world. We own the PGA Championship and the Ryder Cup. And the revenues from the TV contracts and the revenues of those events pretty much fund a lot of the programs for the PGA, because our dues only funds maybe 2 or 3% of our gross revenues. So those events are very important to us. The question is, how do we take those funds and how do we use them in a manner dodging inurement? You know, inurement is something that I'm sure you're familiar with. We got to be careful being a tax, a 501c, you know, that we don't pay tax, that we need to make sure the things that we provide our members do not violate a direct benefit back to the same members who get the tax benefit from being tax exempt. So, for example, we can't just give education for free. Neither can the CMAA. There has to be a cost to do the education passed on to our members because we are a 501c non-tax organization. So that's kind of our number one focus. What can we do to grow the membership services side? We're looking for a director of employment. We're looking for a new director to help be a liaison between our 41 sections in the national headquarters. So I think you're going to see a lot of focus on services to our members on the membership side and services to our section. Also, we're going to see a lot of growth, I think, that we've seen already the last 3 or 4 years in PGA Junior League Golf. Are you familiar with that?
I don't know too much about it, so definitely enlighten me a little bit, Paul.
Well, and people can go to pga.org if they'd like to know more. But it's Little League Baseball, but in golf.
Nice.
It's a team sport. Both boys and girls play together on the same team. They play 9-hole scramble matches, and it really creates a team environment. They wear uniforms like Little League Baseball, and we've grown in the last 4 years from just a few thousand participants to this year. We should be close to 40,000. It's being done all over the country. And let's face it, junior golf, when we talk about player development or we talk about growing the game or bringing in new golfers or having more golfers, there's no better way to get new players to the game and increase those numbers than doing it when people are young as junior golfers. Because once you do something young, you do it the rest of your life. You know, we see sometimes where we reach out, and we need to continue to reach out to the millennials, to ladies. We need to reach out in the aspect of diversity and inclusion to the game. We need to get more and more where the game of golf and the people who play it look like the world today we live in. You know, minorities that are involved, get more minorities to play the game. But nothing's better than getting people to start young. And our Junior League Golf has really been a home run for us and one of our stars and what we think we're doing in growing the game and trying to bring the game of golf to youngsters all over the country. And then, of course, there's a lot of other ways we have junior golf. A lot of our sections have their own junior golf program. They have their own tournament programs, their own instruction programs, not to mention every club where there's a PGA professional, there's some kind of instruction going on. So those are a couple of the things. I think we're going to also see us, we're taking a more active role in the global arena, which we maybe haven't done as much in the past. The game of golf and the business of the world, as we know, has gone global.
Absolutely.
You know, the boundaries of countries aren't as evident as they were at one time in doing business. Right. You know, we have jobs that are outsourced. It's not great. A lot of Americans say, I hate the fact they're outsourcing jobs. But companies operate on a global stage today. You look at the NBA and the NFL. They expanded globally many years ago. So that just gives you an idea of kind of what some of the highlights of what you would see coming out of our strategic plan. And again, diversity and inclusion are a main focus for us in every aspect of what we do in the PGA of America.
Nice. Now, where do you see golf going? I mean, you know, it's a sport that's changing. Where do you see the future 5-10 years down the road, Paul?
You know, and I'm not just saying this because I'm in the business or because I'm an officer for the PGA. I'm kind of bullish. I think we've seen the bottoming out of golf participation rates and number of golfers growth. I think we've seen the bottoming out of course closures. We're still having course closures, but not as many as we did have. So, and I think some of that's just, it's like private clubs. It's just an economic correction. You can only have so many clubs in a market.
Yeah, they built the properties too fast.
So many facilities. Yeah, yeah, we overbuilt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I think you're right on there. Well, I know our time's kind of coming to a close, so I just want to get to a few of the questions that some listeners have actually posed. And you touched on a couple of them, but I want you to maybe dive a little bit more deep here. There's going to be four questions here. The first one comes from Chandilo Fernando in New York City, and he says, how will you educate the next generation of young girls to play in a male-dominant sport?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and obviously you've heard me talk about diversity and inclusion. One, junior league golf's a great example. It's the first time that I know of in the junior golf arena where we've got an activity that is competitive. It's something that we're seeing grow in all of our 41 sections, and it actually leads to a national championship where they compete together in the same competition, play the same tees. You know, when it's all said and done, we need to do a better job of providing opportunities for women in golf. If you look at our PGA membership, we have somewhere roughly about 1,000 female PGA professionals and 24,000 men. And we need to provide better opportunities for these ladies. I think there's a great opportunity for some of the college-age golfers who come out of college to get into the golf business and, you know, to use their golf skills to get into different aspects. They might not all become professionals. I'd like to see as many become professionals, but, you know, there's a lot of different jobs, as you know, in the club industry.
Mm-hmm.
And back at the club level and the player youth level, we have to make sure our professionals and anyone involved within the industry present the game of golf as we are changing. We are addressing. We can't make every private club change their rules, but you and I both know a lot of private clubs have had rules that discriminate over the years, and we have to take a stance on that, encourage these clubs to change their rules to make it more female-friendly. I encourage all of our professionals to try to do your best to hire one of the members of your golf staff be a female, and we have to tell the story, kind of tell the success stories of a Susie Whaley, the success stories of you know, some of the young ladies you see playing the tour today. You know, we've got some great examples of people who have made it in that arena. Also, you look at the Golf Channel, people who have jobs in the media. We have to do everything we can to tell those success stories, but to get everyone involved in golf to understand that it really needs to be on equal footing.
Mm-hmm. Yep, excellent. Our next question comes from Robert Smith in Baltimore, Maryland, and Robert asks, what's next for golf in a post-Tiger world? Nike's out and Tiger is out. How will the golf world and the PGA respond?
Well, I think let's talk about the golf world. I think the golf world has already responded through the natural evolution of people playing the game. I don't think there's been as exciting a time with young champions, personalities of the greatest players in the game as we have today since maybe the heyday of Nicklaus and Palmer in the 60s or late 50s. But you look at Rory McIlroy. You look at, Jason Day. You look at Jordan Spieth. These are all players under the age of 30. You know, Justin Thomas. I've got a friend whose mom and dad went to LSU with me, Smiley Kaufman, 23-year-old kid, won in Las Vegas his first couple of events on the PGA Tour. He's a great kid, and he's great for the game of golf, and he's personable. And on the female side, you look at Brooke Henderson, who won our KPMG LPGA Championship. She is great for the game of golf. Personable, is playing the game at a very young age at the highest level. You look at Lydia Ko, what she's done in her short career, Stacey Lewis, so Lexi Thompson. We've got an unbelievable collection of young, talented players that are personable, that are great for the game, and great for marketing the game today. So that's what I see in the industry. And what is the PGA doing? Well, our job is to continue to grow the game, to continue to teach the game of golf to these youngsters. Every one of these players has a PGA professional that usually helped introduce them or is their teacher or is still their teacher. You look at a Joe Hallett who teaches Stacey Lewis. there's a PGA professional behind most of these players. So our job is to continue to grow the game, encourage people to take up this game that we love, and develop these great players that are going to go out. And Tiger, let's not forget, Tiger's 40-plus years old, so it's not like Tiger didn't have a great career.
Oh, yeah,
and he was great for the game of golf.
Yep.
But they, you know, his first event, I think, was 1997, almost, 20 years ago.
Yeah, it was. Yep. If he was an automobile, he would have the antique plates on them.
There you go.
Yep. All right, last
question. He probably wouldn't appreciate that.
No, he wouldn't. Last question for you, Paul, from the listeners here. Adam Thomas of Carlsbad, California writes, golf is perceived as a sport for relatively affluent white people. What efforts are the PGA taking to bring the sport to lower income and minority populations?
Well, you know, the challenge when you say bring the game to lower income and minority, let's be real clear. We try to influence operators in the industry, but most clubs are owned and operated, as you know, not necessarily by the professional. The professional is an employee at most clubs. And so we've got to encourage owners and operators of club to give back to the community and provide opportunities for people to have entry-level opportunities in golf. You know, it is an expensive game. That's one of the barriers for golf. As for minorities and females, we talked a little bit about, it's incumbent upon us as golf professionals to do everything we can to break those barriers, to whether it's the club we work at, whether it's our local community, to expand. And we're doing a lot of that with what we do. For example, we've created a mentorship program for young PGA apprentices and professionals that are based in the diversity and inclusion world to see how can we help groom them to be leaders. So might be a young professional who's at a club in New Mexico, who's of Indian heritage, and what can we do to help them become a section president one day, or one day be the president of the PGA. We have to take a leadership role, as I said, in everything we do in diversity and inclusion, and we have to basically put our money where our mouth is. We have to create programs. We have to be leaders in our locale, at our clubs, in our communities to open up those opportunities.
Well, thank you, Paul. I appreciate those answers, and I'm sure the listeners will appreciate them as well. And we look forward to seeing what the PGA does here. Now, this is the 100th anniversary year of the PGA. Tell me a little bit about that before we leave you.
Well, you know, the PGA of America was founded in 1916 in New York City, and we're coming full circle in November when we have our annual meeting at the Grand Hyatt in Manhattan. So this year, to celebrate what we've done, we've had quite a few different things, but we really have tried to celebrate our members. We tried to tell the story of our professionals who love this game, who play it at a high level, who teach it, who impact people's lives, and tell those stories. So we've created a Thanks PGA Pro campaign that you can find on the internet, or you can find by going to pga.org. And what we've done is you'll see a lot of different people from all walks of life and a lot of tour professionals thanking the PGA professional in their life that introduced them to the game or got them to really get excited about golf. We, back in the spring, we had all 41 of our sections, it was a period of about 60 or 75 days, were highlighted at one time or another on the Golf Channel and told their story. It was kind of a five-minute vignette in the morning where they would say, here's the Dixie section, which encompasses most of Alabama and the panhandle of Florida. Their president is this. The Dixie section was founded in 1940, whatever. And they would tell a story about what is one aspect that section's doing to give back to the community, of which many of those stories were rooted in giving back to those not as privileged, giving back to kids, giving back to minorities, growing the game, educational opportunities, scholarship opportunities. So those are a couple of things we've done, but really it's about our members. It's about the day-to-day PGA professional at your club who wakes up early, goes to the club, operates the club, gives the lessons, runs the tournament, makes sure the golf carts get out. They're there when the sun's setting at night, and it's about those men and women who have given to this game for 100 years to help people enjoy this great game.
It's a wonderful game. You're absolutely right about that. Two last really quick questions for you. I don't know if you're allowed to answer this one, Paul, but who is your favorite PGA golfer right now?
Well, my favorite PGA golfer growing up was Jack Nicklaus. He was the best in the game. I probably related to him, blonde hair, blue eye, which I was. And, you know, I had an uncle that lived in South Florida, and he used to always say, Jack Nicklaus. And this is back when I was maybe 10 or 11 when I first started the game. And I would say he was my idol growing up and was by far the person that I looked up to. I taught myself to play the game by reading his book, Golf My Way. It was the first golf book I ever had. My dad wasn't a golfer. This is like 1972 in New Orleans, Louisiana. So today, I don't really have a favorite. You know, there are a lot of them out there that with my position, I've got to know that I respect, that I like, and there's so many. I mean, you know, one of my favorites happens to be the kid from LSU, Smiley Kaufman,
sure,
just because his mom and dad were friends of mine, and he's a great kid.
Yeah.
He stays at the house with my wife and I, and I think he's going to be great for the game. But there's a lot of young players out there. Justin Thomas, his dad, Mike Thomas, was on our board of directors for the PGA. I've known Mike for 25 years, and it's great to see his youngster now being one of the best in the game. You know, you look at Jordan, you look at Jason Day. What a personality. What a great person for golf. You know, you look at Brooke Henderson. I mean, she oozes personality. So for me to pick one that's a favorite, it'd be hard to do. But no doubt growing up, I had one, and that was Jack Nicklaus.
Awesome. Excellent. And then last question for you. We call it the bucket list question. Ask all our guests. If there's one club out there, could be a golf facility or a private club of any kind that people need to see before they die, what would it be for you, Paul?
Well, a facility, I think one of the greatest facilities, and I'm going to stay in America because there's a few I love overseas and I'll share those. But in America, Pinehurst is a place you got to go if you're a golfer. Pinehurst number two, number four, great golf courses. I think Pinehurst number two is one of my favorite courses. You know, you've got whatever, 9 or 10 courses. I've never been to Bandon Dunes, but many of my friends say it's a place that you have to go. And then a place that I've really enjoyed going that I didn't get to spend a lot of time earlier in my career, I was just up in the New Jersey, New York area, the metropolitan New York area. There are so many great golf courses up there. It's just not even funny. I mean, you could play a different golf course every day for about 6 months in the New Jersey, metropolitan New York area.
Yeah.
There are so many great old golf courses. I love the classic designs, the Tillinghast, the Donald Rosses, those old classic golf courses that let you play,
right,
that let you hit the driver. And then if you go overseas, probably my favorite golf course overseas, I love Portrush in Northern Ireland, Royal Portrush, where the British Open is going to be in 2019. It's one of my favorite facilities in the world. Royal County down in Ireland. Unbelievable golf course. And then, of course, Scotland. I don't have enough time to name them all. But I do love Lynx Golf. And
yeah,
if you're a golfer, you love the game of golf, and you've never gone across the pond to Scotland, Ireland, Northern Ireland, England to play, there are so many great Lynx courses. I encourage you to do so. Because I think, for me, if I could play one golf course the rest of my life and be the only course I play, I think I'd play a Lynx golf course.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah, I love it. I like the fact that you got to get the ball on the ground. You got to hit it here to have it go there. We're in America, we're spoiled because the golf courses are maintained so perfect. It's A to B golf. They're dartboards. You know, a lot of times, you know, they get in the U.S. Open, the scores aren't as high because they kind of dry out the greens or things of that nature. But at the end of the day, I like Lynx golf, the movement of the land, the hitting the different running shots and low shots or trying to work the ball differently. Whereas a lot of times in America, you look at the tour events, the courses are in just perfect shape. And they're, you know, now the game is how high can you hit it? How high can you launch it? And the iron shots hit them on a straight line, hit them right at the pin, and they stick and they hold. When you play a lot of the courses over there, the Lynx courses, there's not a lot of times that ball's always going to stick and hole. You're dealing with wind, you're dealing with rain, you're dealing with Mother Nature.
I love it. I love it. Well, that's one of my dreams, actually, is to get out to Scotland. Hope to do that maybe next year. So I would love to play some of those courses and some of those really historic clubs out there. Paul, thank you so much for being on Private Club Radio. Really appreciated the time that you spent with us, and hope you have a good rest of your day.
Well, thank you very much, and let me know if I can do something for all of you down the road.
A big thanks to Paul for coming on the show. That was really wonderful. Enjoyed getting his perspective and his take. I can't imagine what it's like to run an organization like the PGA of America. That responsibility must be pretty incredible. So my hat is off to that guy. I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes out of the PGA of America under his tenure. I think it's going to be a really great time for golf and for our industry as private clubs. Before I leave you today, just a preview of some upcoming episodes we're going to be having here on Private Club Radio in the coming weeks. Next week, we will be joined by Frank Vane. He's the president of the McMahon Group. He's always got a great, fresh take. Really looking forward to hearing what he has to say. On the 29th, Cam Schultz. He's the vice president of marketing at VGM Club, a pretty unique company. He also has the Club Sense podcast, if you listen to that show. On September 5th, we're not going to have a guest. The show's going to be a little bit different in September. I am going to talk to you about some ideas that I have in terms of membership and marketing, because we had a lot of questions come in. A lot of people voted for that topic. So I'm going to give you my two cents on September 5th. And on September 12th, we're going to have a special edition. I went to the Westmore Club in Nantucket. You've probably heard me refer to that a couple times on the show. But what we did was a piece all about that club. It's really a unique club. They have some interesting activities and some stuff I think that's really going to get your juices flowing when you hear about it. So we interview some of the key staff there and learn what they're doing that makes it so exciting, so unique, and so fresh. That's going to be on September 12th. You'll want to come back and hear that one. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, which you can do on your podcast app if you're using an iPhone, or on Android. You can either use the Stitcher app, the Google Play app, the TuneIn app. There's plenty of apps out there. Just make sure you subscribe to the show. That way you get each and every new episode on Mondays when we drop them and you stay up to date. Hopefully you're enjoying this education that we're providing. And if you are, might I ask one simple favor from you to please share this show with just one friend or one colleague who you think could benefit from Private Club Radio, who's looking to take the next step in their career and further their leadership at a private club. Until next week, here's to your membership success.
Just because this round is over doesn't mean you can't enjoy the 19th hole. Check out privateclubradio.com for more. Private Club Radio is brought to you by Shake Creative, the premier marketing and design firm, helping prestigious clubs increase and retain their membership. Visit shaketampa.com to learn more.